This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
Tomorrow we will learn specifically the counties that the governor is going to roll back into phase number two. Snohomish and King County are the big ones that are almost assuredly going to be moved back. Although, of course, we said this a little bit earlier on in the show, King County on Friday announced that they were holding steady on their numbers instead of looking worse. And that, of course, is, you know, relatively good news, but they will tell you that the numbers still are not looking good, still below where the governor has arbitrarily set the data points, that the bar for those data points to be, so that we would not have to go into the phase number two rollback. Snohomish County has been saying for the longest time, stop this arbitrary decision making, that you shouldn't be punishing businesses with these new restrictions at a time when so many businesses are struggling. You heard from Pierce County officials that putting these new rules in place at a time when businesses had finally started to see the light at the end of the tunnel was just cruel to them. Not that they weren't taking COVID seriously, but looking at the actual number of vaccines that were getting in arms, looking at the, not just the cases that, yes, were going up, but looking at the hospitalization rate, which was not what people were pretending them to be, which were not alarming, which were not overrunning hospitals. The death rate was still low. It just didn't make sense. But the governor was ignoring Pierce County officials, wasn't working with them on the ground. We heard from Snohomish Council Member Nate Nearing saying that the governor and his office wasn't really working with leaders on the ground there. Not really hearing much from King County other than sucking up to the governor. Oh, we'll do what we can. We'll do what he says. It just doesn't seem like we're really in a good position. And that's unfortunate because there are a lot of lives on the line having nothing to do with COVID directly, but with the policies directly. People are going to be hurt. Businesses are going to struggle. Businesses are not going to survive this. Businesses barely survived before, and they got the taste of some freedom. They got the taste of survival, only to be told that they're going to have to revert back to the 25% occupancy rate, restaurants, retail stores. At a time where so many more people in the state of Washington, and really the country, are getting vaccinated. At a time where, and we went over the New York Times article earlier today, public health officials are saying, we're not going to get to herd immunity. The best that we're going to be able to do, effectively, is deal with COVID, mitigate it. But you're not going to get to herd immunity. And part of the problem is we keep getting mixed messages. You've got lawmakers and public health officials sending you mixed messages on the efficacy of the vaccine. On the one hand, we're being told the best way to get out of this is to get your vaccine. And yet we're also told, but you should still wear your mask. Why would someone get a vaccine if they still have to wear their mask? It makes no sense. Dr. Leanna Wen from CNN made that case about Joe Biden, who's just being overly cautious.
He could have decided that he was only going to have fully vaccinated people who had proof of vaccination attend that joint session. And then, in return, they could enter. By the way, they could also get a negative test to be extra sure. But in return, they can go into the chamber, take off their mask, have no distancing, hug one another, and essentially return to 2019. And then imagine if President Biden had started his address that way and said, look at where we are now. This is where the country can be at, too. Let's please get vaccinated. I think that would have sent such a strong signal because, frankly, presidents are role models. They role model public, well, good public health behavior. The former President Trump really did a poor job of this. And I wonder if President Biden is trying to overcorrect and be overly cautious here.
Well, the funny thing is, Trump was not wearing a mask outdoors. He didn't need to. He did not need to. Biden does not need to, and he's choosing to. And the message that he's sending is that you need to wear a mask outdoors. That is wrong.
But I think over caution also has a price, in that masks somehow become a performative act rather than a life-saving act when it's really needed. And also, it's really underselling the power of the vaccine.
So she's right. The vaccine either works or it doesn't. And if it works, then you don't need to wear your mask. Well, Jason, what if you have COVID and you don't even realize it? Well, then the other person who did not get a vaccine should have their mask on if the mask works. That's the message that you should be sending, but it's not. And so people are hearing this message and they're saying, well, why would I waste my time getting two vaccine shots if nothing's going to change? And as a result of the bad messaging, people aren't getting the vaccines. The hesitancy is going up. People aren't getting their second shot. And by the way, the first shot does provide a good amount of coverage. Obviously not as much, but a good amount. But due to the hesitancy, we're going to go ahead and just shut down more counties. And it doesn't just hurt the big cities like a Seattle or an Everett or a Tacoma. It hurts some of the smaller cities, smaller communities. It hurts Milton, the gem of Pierce County. It hurts University Place. It hurts Sammamish. And it hurts Sultan. Mayor Russell Wieta of Sultan joins me now. Mayor Wieta, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
So with the prospect of a shutdown being officially announced tomorrow, how does a smaller community like Sultan prepare and then move forward?
So we're concerned, obviously, for our small businesses and residents. I'm concerned that the current regulatory scheme that the governor has provided is going to continue to hurt our small businesses and residents without having the intended effect on reducing new cases and hospitalizations. We haven't seen the negative effects of COVID as much as more urban areas, even Snohomish County, yet we're tied to the same metrics of the county. So for our small businesses, really, they know what to do. They've frankly been doing a lot of the things they need to do the whole time. And, you know, we hope that our businesses are going to do okay through this. We've got a number of businesses that are really just hanging on, and this is going to be really detrimental to them.
It's always interesting that a lot of folks will escape some of the bigger cities and move to places like Sultan. In fact, Sotheby's has a report out that suggests a lot of people are leaving Seattle and going to the city of Sultan and some other of the more rural suburban areas. And yet they just can't escape some of the policies that are geared towards problems that have been created by places like Seattle. I mean, do you get a sense that the governor is paying attention to some of these smaller communities that have not been as impacted by COVID as the bigger cities?
Well, we certainly don't feel like we're being heard. The mayors in Snohomish County have been pretty well on the same page, and that includes some of our more urban counterparts, that these metrics and these regulatory schemes don't make sense. And, for example, if you look at the most recent heat map in Snohomish County provided by the health district showing the COVID case distribution by geographic area, Sultan and other small cities don't even register on it.
Yep.
So, I mean, we're not significantly causing the increase, yet we're being tied to the same regulations as more urban areas.
So where's the disconnect, do you think? Why is it that they're not hearing you?
Well, it's hard to say, and I wish you could have the governor on to ask him that question.
We know that's definitely not going to happen.
You know, early on in the pandemic, before even the first reopening plan was introduced, the mayors had written a letter asking the governor to come up with a roadmap, essentially, so that there was some level of predictability. Granted, we didn't know where we were going to be, obviously, mm-hmm. a year later, but the message was loud and clear in the Everett Herald. I think it was the governor's chief of staff said, basically, we're not going to change our decision based on input from local leaders. And that's really discouraging. I mean, it hasn't stopped us from sharing our thoughts. We've come together on joint statements to the governor a number of times, but that's not the way to do things. That's certainly not how we do things at the local level.
So, and I'm not necessarily saying you should do this, but what would happen if you guys just said, no, we're not going to follow this, that we're going to, as a county, make the decisions that are best left to a local level because we understand our community better than you do?
Yeah, I think so. I've certainly had folks reaching out and asking if we could do something like that. The problem is, and I think we saw this with a county down in Southwest Washington earlier in the pandemic last summer, where they basically did that. The county commissioners passed a resolution saying, we're not going to abide by this, our county's open. And my concern with something like that is that it's state agencies at the direction of the governor that are enforcing this, right? On your local businesses, L&I and Liquor Control Board and others who are levying fines and shutting people down. And so my concern is if at a local level we say, nope, we're open, we're really not. It's not local enforcement agencies that are hurting these small businesses. So if a business sees their city council or their mayor say, go ahead and open up, and they do, and then state agencies still come after them, I feel like we've done them a disservice. Yeah.
Well, we wish you guys the best of luck. Obviously, we'll get the official announcement tomorrow. All indications seem to be pointing to a rollback, but maybe we'll be surprised. Maybe the governor will be listening to at least a podcast of the Jason Rand Show. He won't come on and have a conversation, but we know he listens. Russell Weta, the mayor of Salton, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, Jason.
You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Don't forget, tomorrow I will be on the Faulkner Focus in the 8 o'clock hour. Topic is TBD. I'm excited for it, though. Well, no matter what it is, I'm sure I'll say something brilliant. Don't give me that look, Peyton. Peyton, give me a look. Make sure you follow along on youtube.com/JasonRants, where I post all the videos of my Fox News appearances. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
In an exclusive story you're only going to hear about on this show, a local high school decided to bribe students into getting the vaccine, and at least one father is pretty ticked off about it. In fact, he's going to join us in just a couple moments. It's one of those stories that should upset people because it's trying to get in the ears of these kids and get them to make a medical decision that maybe the parents wouldn't want them to get on their own. Right now, you've got schools in Washington State and schools all across the country that require community service hours in order to graduate. In this case, it's Chimacum Junior Senior High School, and it's right near Port Townsend in Chimacum, Washington. And for the school, like all public high schools in Washington, you have to fulfill a certain amount of hours, 55 hours of community service if you want to graduate. Now, the school decided to email their students last week with some ideas on how they can fulfill their community service hours. Because remember, we're in the middle of a pandemic where the schools aren't fully operational. And maybe some students are wondering, hey, what can I do? What can I do with all these places shut down in order to get that 55 hours? And so there were some ideas. You can pick up some litter, maybe go to a local park, pick up some of the trash, do an hour there. Hey, that's an hour. Maybe you can go to an online school board meeting via Zoom. You can participate there. You don't even have to say anything. You can just watch. Hey, you can write a letter to the editor of a newspaper. Participate civically. Get involved. Spend some time there. But one of the options caught the attention of a parent. Getting a COVID vaccine. That would count, according to the school, for community service hours. Students who get the COVID vaccine and they submit the paperwork to the school, proof that they actually got it, didn't just earn the amount of time it would take to get in line and get the COVID vaccine, which, you know, depending on when you got it, could maybe at the most take an hour if things were running slowly, but at the least take 17 minutes, which is how long it took me to get my second shot. You would earn a whopping 25 hours towards the community service requirement. So almost half of the time to get the two shots. Unless, of course, you got the J&J. That feels coercive. This is a form of bribery. In fact, it is bribery. You are bribing kids into a decision that they may not even want to make, or more importantly, because in a lot of cases here, we're talking about minors, the parents may not want them to make. But of course, the pitch is appealing to a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid. The vaccine process maybe takes 30 minutes, yet you've got students getting a premium on getting that vaccine. You're earning 25 hours for two shots, maybe one if you get the J&J. A high schooler would jump at that, wouldn't you? Now, I reached out to their principal, whose name is David Cartham, and he emailed me saying, at CJSHS, that's the school, we're providing our students with opportunities to improve their community in ways accessible to them, given the circumstances of this pandemic. Vaccination is just one of the voluntary ways that students can choose to fulfill this requirement. We know that immunization helps protect our community, which is why we call it a service. He notes that many options are available beyond vaccination and says there is no coercion. Students can choose any of the options or suggest their own. Well, I reached out and said, well, okay, well, if you go ahead and clean up a park full of litter, can you get more than 1 hour per 1 hour of work? Didn't respond to that. Now, one father disagrees and thinks this is, in fact, coercion. That father joins me now.
great to be here. Thank you, Jason.
So why did you find this email inappropriate? Why do you find this requirement or this recommendation of 25 hours inappropriate?
Well, to me, anytime the public schools place an incentive like this on the criteria for graduation, I find that it diminishes the role of the parents and family in some of these decisions that should be made with thoughtful and meaningful discussion. And I think it kind of usurps the parents' role and the family's role in making those. So it seems a little concerning to me.
From your perspective, what should the role be from the school as it relates to the vaccine? Is it okay to promote it? Is it okay to have conversations about it? Does it stop being okay from the perspective of requiring it, of putting any sort of incentive on it? Just generally speaking, what role should the school actually play?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that educating health concerns is paramount. I mean, we can't argue that point. But the decisions and creating incentives, I think, is where we start to deviate from what's acceptable in a public entity like the public school system. And so education, discussion, you know, encouragement, absolutely. You know, whether it comes from vaccinations or overall physical health, such as, you know, flu vaccines or just being in general good health, getting exercise and that sort of thing. I mean, it's vital for us to all to be in that discussion. But when we actually place legitimate, tangible incentives, I think mm-hmm. there's a discussion to be had about it. And I think that's important.
Have you expressed any of your concerns with the school?
I have in other ways over other issues, not this one specifically.
Why not?
Well, my daughter, she's only in eighth grade at this point, and so the policy hasn't really come into my circle of concern directly. In other words, it doesn't really affect us yet, and it could kind of phase out. But at this point, I didn't really see a need to address it directly to them.
Is there a fear that there's a slippery slope at play here, that at some point not only does the incentive continue, but maybe it develops into a mandate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we allow this sort of methodology to invade our public institutions, I think it's important and our duty to place them under strict scrutiny and constantly assure that they don't encroach on or potentially compromise the, you know, our natural personal sanctuary and our liberties as a family and our natural rights. And I kind of see that as being concerning here. I mean, maybe it's just a few hours of community service, but it's something that could lead to an acceptance of potentially worse.
Yeah, although to be fair, it's more than a few hours. 25 hours of your 55 requirement, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a huge. I mean, if you were to think about that in terms of a job, you know, if you were to pay somebody that amount, that's a great deal of money.
Is this a concern that you have, or do you get the sense that more folks in the community are paying attention to this and there's growing concern?
I think there's growing concern as it comes closer to their kids mm-hmm. and their relationship as the parents in their family, and they see these decisions being pushed from outside influences, like institutions like the public school. I think it's not just my concern, but it's many people's concerns.
Well, you know, obviously, it's good that you're paying attention to this kind of stuff. It doesn't impact your kid directly yet, but it's one of those issues that very well could. And obviously, depending
Absolutely.
On where things go, as we hear and we talked about the story earlier today on the show from the New York Times, public health officials don't think we're going to be able to get to herd immunity anytime soon, which means this issue isn't going away and it's going to be cropping up at schools, I anticipate, across the state of Washington. So people need to be paying attention to this stuff because it is, no matter what the principal wants to say, it is coercive to a kid who
Absolutely.
Maybe is behind on their community service hour saying, oh, this is a way to get 25 hours. I get this shot. I wasn't really thinking about getting it. I'm otherwise healthy and don't feel like I need it right now. I don't have any comorbidities. I'm perfectly healthy. Don't hang out with anybody who's got comorbidities. I guess I'll go ahead and get it. even though it might not be the right move for them at this moment. I'm not anti-vax. I just feel like people should make up their minds for themselves. I made up my mind. I got it. I want people to get it, but I want people to make it up on their own rather than feel like they're being pushed into it for an incentive. It's just, it feels wrong to me. It felt wrong to you. I'm glad you brought this to our attention. We've been talking with the father of a student over at Chimicum Junior Senior High School. Thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it.
You bet, Jason. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Welcome back to The Jason Rancho on KTTH. Thank you so much for tuning in. It seems very clear that the Biden administration is in the pockets of the teachers unions. They spent a lot of money to back Joe Biden. They're going to make sure that they have as much influence over this administration as humanly possible. And as much as I've given a hard time and will continue to give a hard time to Governor Jay Inslee and other Democrats, I will credit them when they speak up against the teachers unions here and anywhere. When Democrats stand up to the teachers unions, they do so at great risk to their political support. I suppose in a state like Washington, you know, Jay Inslee doesn't care as much about the teachers union support when he's in a position that he's in because he knows that no Democrat is going to step up and challenge him. And it's not like the teachers unions are going to threaten to give money or support to a Republican challenger if one were to step up, if God forbid, Jay Inslee run again. So he has stepped up and said, no, it's time to reopen our schools. Now, has he gone all in and just reopened our schools completely? No, but he's done way more than a lot of other governors who are Democrats have. Now, nationally, Democrats are terrified of the unions because of the amount of money and influence that they have. And so Joe Biden has gone out of his way to make sure that the teachers unions get what they want. And right now they want to keep schools closed. And that's why across the country, we have so many schools that to this day still remain closed. Some of them still are closed, although we were told, remember, the first 100 days, the vast majority of the schools would be open the vast majority of the time. We got all of these promises. They try to frame their promises in very specific ways to give them some carve-out. So when they send a senior advisor out there to CNN, like Anita Dunn, she can go out there and say, well, you know, we didn't promise for sure certain that they'd all be reopened. You know, we'll get them reopened, you know, baby steps.
One of the great accomplishments of this administration, and one the president is very proud of, is that 80% of the teachers and school personnel in this country have now been vaccinated.
By the way, why aren't 80% of the schools reopened 80% of the time? Yeah.
If you recall, a couple of months ago, the president made the announcement that we were going to have a special supply of vaccine dedicated precisely for this reason. Now, he said probably. He didn't say absolutely. But given the science, if the vaccination program in this country proceeds, if people do go get their vaccines, he does believe that schools should be able to reopen in September. And reopen safely following the CDC guidelines.
CDC guidelines that were written in part by the teachers unions. The New York Post has a really good report out, and everyone should read it because it gives you a sampling, just a sampling, of how the teachers unions are able to exert their influence over the process. What I love about this, Joe Rogan last week said healthy young people shouldn't be in a rush to get the vaccine, and media outlets and progressives decried, he is not a doctor. And yet you've got the American Federation of Teachers lobbying the CDC, suggesting language for their reopening guidance, getting adopted, and no one says a thing. We now have emails between both groups, and they show coordination on messaging. They adopted language. According to the New York Post, there was a call between Dr. Walensky, the CDC director, and Randy Weingarten, the teachers union president. It was arranged for February 7th. And all of the email back and forth in this phone call paid off because in at least two instances that we know of, language suggestions is how it's being framed, that were offered by the union to the CDC were actually adopted almost word for word in the final text of the CDC guidance. They were preparing the CDC to write that schools could provide in-person instruction regardless of community spread of the virus. But the teachers union argued for the inclusion of the line reading, quote, in the event of high community transmission results from a new variant of COVID, a new update of these guidelines might be necessary. That language appeared on page 22 of the final guidance. They also, the teachers union, demanded a special remote work concession for teachers who, quote, have documented high-risk conditions or who are at increased risk for COVID-19. And that similar arrangements should extend to, quote, staff who have a household member with similar risks. Well, guess what? That text also made it into the final guidance. How weird is that? Ash Short is a senior editor at the Daily Wire. She's been covering this, and she joins me now. I love the fact that, and you've been covering this for a while now, it's all about, progressives love to talk about, well, let's follow the science, let's follow the data, and yet somehow the teachers' unions have been not following any of the science, they're not following any of the data, they're keeping schools closed as best as possible, and now we learn about these emails showing that they had all of this influence over the CDC. So where do things stand across the country right now, just generally speaking, with reopening?
Reopening, I believe that there's a lot of schools that have reopened, but not in major cities that are run by Democrats, of course, and who are beholden to teachers' unions, like the Federation for American Teachers, this one that was just sending all the emails. They wield so much power in the Democratic Party. I mean, you saw Biden's tone just change when he became president, because it was just whatever the teachers union said goes. I mean, this is a party that is constantly saying, we're the party of science. Republicans don't follow the science. And yet, here they are ignoring the science because the teachers don't want to go to work. I mean, you've got them sitting there saying, you're killing us. I don't want to die and going to work. You're going to kill me, even though, you know, grocery store workers and other essential workers have been going to work throughout the entire pandemic without this kind of complaining. You know, you've got that, but you've also just got this whole anti-science applied to the right. Right. So right now you've got people. We have that professor from Stanford who was saying, you know what, Ron DeSantis, Republican governor of Florida, is understanding this science better than, you know, most epidemiologists. And yet your so-called party of science won't even reopen schools, no matter how many doctors, no matter how many scientists, no matter how many, you know, members of the administration, Trump or Biden, saying, yeah, schools are not a death trap for people. I mean, this is what we're dealing with.
And at the same time, it's funny because folks are just ignoring the fact that private schools have been open almost this entire time. And I don't know what it's been like where you live, but I up here in Washington, we have not seen any stories of any significant spread of COVID at any of these private schools.
No, of course not. Private schools have been open. That's why there's so many parents that are like desperate to get their kids out of public schools and into private schools, because private schools are open. And like you said, there is no massive spread of COVID in these private schools. I mean, again, party of science, you have open schools to actually study. You know, meanwhile, the students who can't afford private schools, of course, are going to be low-income students. Quite a few of them are going to be minority students. So Democrats, by keeping schools closed, are hurting the most vulnerable population of students. The students that are already falling behind in failing schools are now unable to even get a real, even semblance of an education, because on top of everything else, they're not even going to school. They're not socializing properly. They're not getting that one-on-one education that they need, that you can get at a private school. And yet if you can't afford a private school, then you are going to fall even further behind. And it seems like Democrats still just do not care. Do not care, because the teachers unions give them millions upon millions of dollars, and that's what matters. Not your children, not your children's future, not your children's mental well-being. None of that. None of that. It's the amount of money they get from teachers unions.
We have only about 30 seconds left, and I'm wondering, from your perspective, do you think finally there will be pushback against teachers unions and teachers in general? We have teachers who have fought really, really hard to keep schools closed, not just the unions, although obviously there have been teachers who wanted to reopen, but a lot of them have not wanted to reopen. And their parents, for the first time, I think, put in a really awkward spot of not wanting to criticize teachers, because teachers do really amazing jobs and they put up with a lot of hard kids, you know, every single day.
Yeah.
But it feels like finally there's been a little bit of a shift in thinking.
Yeah, I think parents, that a whole lot of things have started, and that parents are really starting to get more involved, you know, not just in reopening schools because of COVID, but also because of the curriculum changes, yep. The racist, anti-racist curriculum changes. And I think parents are finally stepping up and realizing that their kids aren't just getting taught facts, they're getting indoctrinated.
It is so absurd what's going on, and I'm glad people are starting to at least wake up to it. And in large part, it's because of some of the work that you've been doing. Ash Short is a senior editor over at The Daily Wire. Thank you so much for stopping by. As always, really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rantz Show. There are very few people out there who blow the minds of progressives, what's left of their minds, than Caitlyn Jenner. The left loves to tokenize minorities, regardless of the kinds of minorities, racial minorities, gender minorities, religious minorities, anything. But the second that we step out of line and we say something that maybe folks on the left disagree with, even sometimes small pieces of disagreement, we're no longer a minority that they're willing to stand up for. We're no longer gay enough or black enough or Muslim enough, woman enough. And for Caitlyn Jenner, she was celebrated when she transitioned publicly from Bruce Jenner to Caitlyn Jenner. She was at one point determined to be an inspiration, a hero. She was a woman of the year, if you'll remember. And uniformly on the left, she was embraced until she decided to openly discuss her politics, until it was clear that she wasn't merely a Republican, but she was a Trump supporter. Now, she wasn't all in on Team Trump. She didn't vote for Trump the second time around. She happened to disagree with him on some positions on transgender issues. But because she happened to be a Republican and still is a Republican, she has since been attacked. She did not read from the script that was presented to her by the left, that she was supposed to read from, that she was supposed to adopt. And so they decided to turn on her. She went from this role model to this pariah. And oh my gosh, do they especially hate her now. They're looking to destroy her. She announced that she's running for governor in California. Gavin Newsom, of course, is being recalled. The recall petitioners got enough of the signatures. They have a little less now than 30 days for, in their process, anyone who signed the petition has up to 30 days to get their name taken off the petition. That seems incredibly unlikely that we'll get enough, because I think they have over 100,000 extra petition signatures that have been confirmed. So that seems unlikely. Gavin Newsom is going through a recall election, and so others have come forward to announce that they're running against him, and Caitlyn Jenner is one of them, and of course she's running as a Republican. So she is a celebrity, much like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who ran as a Republican and a celebrity, and he won. People are now looking to Caitlyn Jenner and saying, oh, could she actually win? And normally folks on the left would celebrate this. I mean, she could potentially be the first transgender governor, but she's a Republican. And over the weekend, in an interview with TMZ, or not even an interview, she was caught leaving some restaurant or something, and one of the losers from TMZ, the annoying camera people, asked her questions about, in this case, transgender student athletes playing sports, and she said something that folks on the left really didn't want to hear.
This is a question of fairness. That's why I oppose biological boys who are trans competing in girl sports in school. It just isn't fair. And we have to protect girl sports in our school.
But if someone transitions and now identifies as a girl, isn't it delegitimizing their identity to prevent them?
Have a good day.
I love that this presumably straight, cisgendered white dude was pushing back on what Caitlyn Jenner has to say about an issue that she happens to know a little bit more than he does about. I love that. She's probably the foremost authority on this issue than pretty much anyone else. She comes from a position of knowledge. We can disagree with people who come from a position of knowledge. We can still disagree, but it is funny that they're pushing back. Tiana Lowe is a commentator with the Washington Examiner, and she joins me now to discuss.
Hi, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Of all the people who, especially folks on the left, love to say we should listen to the shared experiences, the lived experiences, it feels like Caitlyn Jenner knows a thing or two about competing in men's sport and someone who's lived the experience as a transgender woman. Do you know of anyone on the right who just blows the minds of progressives more on this issue than Caitlyn Jenner?
Well, No, really. I mean, she does a great job of triggering just about everyone. I mean, I think the left can't decide whether or not her whiteness and her wealth undermines her transness in the, you know, in the privilege hierarchy.
Exactly, because we have to judge everything on this intersectionality lens. Is anything that Caitlyn Jenner says inherently controversial or unreasonable?
So really, it isn't. I mean, I think that most people who look at the trans sports issue aren't viewing it through the same lens that they view any other issue related to the whole trans question. Rather, just about safety. We know it is unsafe for a lot of these contact sports to have biological men, so trans women, competing against cisgendered women. And then when it comes to non-contact sports, it's a basic question of fairness. The way Title IX is written is specifically designed so that way women have equal opportunities when it comes to athletic scholarships. And that's a lot of women's gateway into college. So no, she's not saying anything inherently controversial. She's, you know, she is someone who obviously has been if not the most visible transgender figure in media. And yet everyone is in the liberal media is acting like as though she's promoting something extremely fringe.
And you made a really good point over the weekend on Twitter about, you know, sort of the whole issue of Caitlyn Jenner, where people stand talking about her. And it kind of, I think, goes to where people are in general. You and I refer to her as her, while we also hold her views on transgender athletes. And then I generally think that's where people are. We'll use pronouns in a respectful way, while also saying, yeah, we're going to take reasonable positions on sports.
Yes, and I think the transgender debate is so polarized in the media when, if you look at public opinion, it really isn't that polarized. Most adults, including conservatives, poll that they will use someone's preferred pronouns as an adult. There is a massive difference between these extremely fringe left-wing media positions about, you know, we need to have biological men clobbering cisgender women in wrestling, or we need to be giving hormone blockers and sterilizing drugs to your 12-year-old. These are not positions shared by the mainstream if you look at the polling. And it's just one of those ways where there is a very coastal bias in media.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, we'll get sort of pigeonholed on the right, or at least I perceive this as, on pronouns, I won't say Z, and I won't pretend that gender doesn't exist. I'm not in favor of government mandating certain pronouns, but I'll refer to people by a preferred pronoun. But the fact that I won't say Z or use made up gender pronouns or even say they, I'm not going to conflate all that stuff. It's still respectful, but folks on the left, some of the fringe folks, want to pretend all those things are equal, but they're not. And I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, no, they're definitely not. I mean, we aren't going to reinvent grammar to appease people who need to feel special. Yeah, we're not using Z, we're not using Zer. And the entire idea about transgenderism being real is that biology and gender is inherently a dichotomy. Isn't it a denial of someone's existence just to pretend like if they mentally identify as the opposite gender than they were identified as? You know, that is inherently the idea that we have a sexual binary, and it is a sign of respect to those people identify as the opposite gender. But yeah, we aren't going to reinvent the English language. We're just going, the focus should be on basic dignity and respect for your fellow man or woman.
Totally. And ignoring certain things and pretending we live in a different reality are separate issues from just basic respect. And I think like 99% of conservatives and 99% of liberals are in that world. It's that 1% on both sides that I think the media tends to hyper-focus on that perverts this all. Tiana Lowe is a commentator with the Washington Examiner. Thank you so much for stopping by, as always. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for listening. Really do appreciate it. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, I'll be on the Faulkner Focus on Fox News. I will see you guys tomorrow. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro right here on KTTH.